You are now on the floor of the 17th and final CIO convention. Joe Glazer, with the guitar, is about to call the roll. Melvin Douglas will be the narrator.
I'm going to call the roll of unions in the CIO. Got them right here on my old banjo. Going to call the big ones, call the small, I'm going to call the in-between ones. Let's call them all, let's call the roll. Let's call the roll. Let's call the roll of the CIO. We've got Uniteds, Amalgamateds, Internationals. They've organized the workers in the shops and mills, in the stores, the offices, the ships on the seas, in the mines, on the buses, in the factories. Let's call the roll. Let's call the roll. Let's call the roll of the CIO. Now down in Pittsburgh, there's United Steel. Up in Detroit is automobile, an aircraft, an agricultural implement too. And on the seven seas, we've got the NMU. That's the CIO. Steelworkers, auto workers, sailors on the sea. We've got the union with a smile, I mean telephone. Up in Vermont is United Stone. We've got electrical and radio, that's IUE. And the men that write the news, they're the ANG. That's the CIO. Good-looking telephone gals, quarry workers, sports writers, too. Now, in the inside pocket of your coat and suit, you'll find the Amalgamated Clothing Workers and a label to boot. We've got retail, wholesale, department store. We've got furniture and wood and many, many more in the CIO. Tailors and lumbermen, laborers and store clerks, all sizes. All colors, all CIO. On the subways of New York, we have TW. Scattered all around, we have United Shoe. We have the SOS boys known as ARA. And now we've got oil, chemical, and atomic. I suggest you move out of the way while I call the roll. Make room for those CIO atoms. We've got tool and die makers known as MESA. We have a lot of CIO up Canada way. From Maine and Oregon to the Gulf of Mexico, wherever you go, there's CIO. Fishermen in Alaska, sugar workers down in Puerto Rico, canal men on the Panama. We've got CIO barbers to cut your hair. CIO tires will take you anywhere. You can light your home with CIO utility. And the transport service union handles your bags with agility and ability. We've got brewery, textile, we can't forget the broadcast engineers they call NABET. The leather union tans the hides while the packing house workers cut up the insides. Pork chops and pot roasts. Rubber workers and radio engineers, spinners and weavers, red caps and bottle caps, all CIO. We've got a lot more union in the CIO. Takes a lot of union to make the CIO go. When the shipbuilders union makes a great big boat, the marine engineers make sure it'll float. We've got paper, insurance, lithographers, glass, government and civic, and now I'm going to pass because I'm all through. Except for a few, like the LIUs, state and city councils, ladies' auxiliaries. They're important too. Every group has played a part in CIO. Every union's made a mark in CIO. Every person's helped to build a CIO. And I'm proud to call the role of CIO. Let's call the role of brotherhood. Let's call the role of dignity. Let's call the role of solidarity. Let's call the role of the CIO.
There are other names, too. Names of places, big cities, tiny one-factory towns. Names of leaders, some known to all, many never identified. Names of friends, names of allies. A roll call that only history itself can put together. The roll call of the CIO.
CIO, CIO, and we'll never stop till we are on top, for we are the CIO. Yes, we'll fight when we must, for our cause is just. We will battle every foe, and we'll never stop till we are on top. CIO. And we'll never stop till you're on top.
They call that the song of the CIO, the spirit of the CIO. The spirit of the CIO. In a couple of verses. Well, it's just as well. A couple of thousand verses or chapters or volumes wouldn't do much more. The story of CIO can't be adequately cataloged. No more than you can catalog the history of love, of honor, or sacrifice, or dedication. The story of CIO is the story of people, millions of them, working, crying, struggling, rejoicing together. It's the story of practical men who dared to dream, and dreamers who dared to be practical. It's the story of Matthew proclaiming again, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavily laden, and I will give you rest." It's Isaiah declaring, "Learn to do well, seek judgment, relieve the oppressed, judge the fatherless, plead for the widow. Come now, and let us reason together."
We will overcome. We will overcome. We will overcome someday. Oh, down in my heart,
tell the story of the CIO. Perhaps someday your grandchildren will be reciting in school.
The CIO was a labor organization during the period 1935 to 1955. It had three presidents, John L. Lewis, Philip Murray, and Walter P. Reuther.
Is that the story of CIO? In a way. But in a real sense, CIO was born long before that official birth date of November 9, 1935. You might say the beginnings go back to the Philadelphia shoemakers, sent to jail in 1806, back to the Pullman strikers, standing up to the bayonets of the United States Army in 1894, back to the steelworkers' strike in 1919, back to the many years of hopes and dreams and unheeded cries of millions of workers for organization. And is there an ending to the CIO? Of course not. For it's more than an organization, a name, a set of initials. There can be no end to the unions built and strengthened under the banner of CIO, to the pensions being paid, to the ideals instilled, to the friendships formed.
Since I've been introduced to the CIO, I ain't no stranger now. Since I've been introduced to the CIO, I ain't no stranger now.
No, there's no real beginning and no end. But these 20 years are a chapter, a particular chapter with particular accomplishments. It fell to us in our generation to meet desperate needs with daring answers, to be the vehicle for organizing Americans to meet those needs. It's been said that we can never know how far we've gone unless we know from where we came. Philip Murray reminded us often from where we came.
I went into towns where children were eating out of garbage pails. People were living in hovels. No pictures on the walls, no carpets on the floors, no music in the homes. The working population was suffering, and in too many instances was starving. Disease, sickness, and poverty were rampant, and death stalked in the wake of every worker's family because he could not purchase medicine.
Pictures on the wall. Music in the homes. What does this have to do with CIO?
What is a union for? to feel the pulse beats of the people, to live close to the people, to understand the people's problems, and then to use constructive, intelligent strength of the organization to promote the well-being of families, and by doing so, to promote the well-being of nations.
To promote the well-being of families, the well-being of nations. How far have we come in the realization of these goals? How does one measure our progress? There are statistics, of course.
From the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Average hourly earnings, all manufacturing employees, 1935, 55 cents. 1955, $1.89. Percentage increase, 261%.
Percentage increase, 261%. Not too bad for 20 years. But these are cold statistics. What does it mean to one man? Let's hear from Frank Tuttle, the first man in his plant to retire on a CIO-negotiated pension. He felt pretty good, and he wanted to tell everybody about it. And remember, this was 1950.
Today, I punched my last-time card at the plant. Now I'm balancing my account. In 1933, my pay was down to 60 cents an hour. Then came the union. By 1950, my wages were $1.83 an hour. Throw in the fringes, like holidays and vacations, and it comes to an even $2. 60 cents before the union, $2 now. Altogether, I figure the union got me about $24,000 extra in wages, and my pension and my insurance is worth an additional $16,000. That makes a total of $40,000 won for me by the union. I've paid $225 in dues, and I've lost about $1,200 walking a picket line. For every dollar of dues and lost time, I've gotten back $28.
28 for one. And the same kind of arithmetic can be done by telephone workers, clothing workers, merchant seamen, oil, rubber, any and every other group of organized workers. But that's not all Frank Tuttle had to say the day he retired. Let's listen.
28 for one. Now, that much is simple arithmetic. But who can calculate the extra years of usefulness to thousands of us because the union didn't let the company say we were too old to work when we reached 40 or 50? How much is it worth to know that when we were laid off, we would be called back in our exact turn? Above all, what allowance for the fact that we have been building a better world to work in, which we can leave as an inheritance to our children and grandchildren? Oh, even Albert Einstein can't give you an equation that'll measure these things.
No, no. There's no equation which can measure self-respect or industrial democracy. And who could measure with statistics the sense of human dignity that CIO brought to America? The millions once considered faceless card numbers who are today treated as human beings and think of themselves as human beings. That rubber worker in Akron, Ohio, said it well after their first sit-down strike.
We were nervous and we didn't know we could do it. Those machines had kept going as long as we could remember. When we finally pulled the switch, there was some quiet. I finally remembered something. That I was a human being. That I could stop those machines. That I was better than those machines anytime.
Oh, sure, you can measure the financial value, but not the spiritual value. Of protection against sickness and old age, of medical centers, of cooperative housing. You can calculate the cost of guaranteed annual wages, but hardly its value. How far have we come? Oh, we've been coming. And we haven't stopped. New tomorrows, new horizons, new goals. And sometimes we even dream.
I dreamed that I had died and gone to my reward. A job in heaven's textile plant on the Golden Boulevard. The mill was made of marble. The machines were made out of gold. And nobody ever got tired. And nobody ever grew old. And nobody ever got tired. And nobody ever grew old.
And sometimes dreams come true. But not easily.
They picked me up about 8 different times and threw me down on my back on the concrete. While I was on the ground, they kicked me in the face, in the head, and other parts of my body. And after they kicked me down, they dragged me by my feet down the stairs. And again, they started to hit me at the bottom of the stairs. They hit me, they slugged me, they drove me ahead of them, but never letting me get away.
Lest we forget, dreams don't come easy. The words you just heard were those of an auto worker called Walter Reuther, testifying about how he'd been attacked by thugs in May 1937 for the crime of distributing leaflets at the Ford plant. But many others never lived to tell their story.
Coroner's report, Frank J. Walsh, coroner, Cook County, Illinois. Name, Otis Jones. Sex, male. Nationality, American. Date of death, June 8th, 1937. Cause of death, injured in riot at Republic Steel Mill, May 30th, 1937. Died in Burnside Hospital. Diagnosis, bullet wound in back.
What was Otis Jones' crime that he was shot in the back? On Memorial Day in 1937, there was a peaceful parade of strikers at the South Chicago plant of the Republic Steel Company. There were 150 policemen, too. Unfortunately, so that all the world could soon know the truth, there were also newsreel photographers present. A columnist for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch examined the films over and over again, and then he wrote of the Memorial Day massacre.
A vivid close-up shows the head of the parade being halted by a group of 150 policemen. Suddenly, without apparent warning, there was a terrific roar of pistol shots. The ground is strewn with dead and wounded. In several instances, from 2 to 4 policemen are seen beating one man. 30 persons, including one woman and 3 minors, received gunshot wounds. 10 men died, 7 shot in the back and 3 in the side. None were hit in the front.
That was 1937. Others died before them, and others since, in the exercise of their democratic rights. And many others were prepared to make the same sacrifice. In February of 1937, sit-down strikers in the Fisher Body Plant No. 4 were threatened with ejection as a result of an injunction which had just been issued. Strikers wired the governor of Michigan.
We, the workers in the plant, are completely unarmed. And to send in the military, armed thugs and armed deputies will mean a bloody massacre. We fully expect that if a violent effort is made to oust us, many of us will be killed. We take this means in making it known to our wives, our children, and to the people of Michigan and of the country. We've decided to stay in.